Thank you for downloading the Three Beards Soccer Podcast, a Baltimore-based soccer show focused on the English Premier League and the footballing world. Please follow us on Facebook and on Twitter, username at Three Beards Pod.
Welcome to a holiday edition of the Three Beards EPL Soccer Podcast. I am your host, Tom Miller, without your other host, Ken Lee, who is down with a couple of sick babies. I don't even have Tyler behind the glass today. I'm behind the glass. I'm driving this ship. But thankfully, we have Dr. Pete, who has been on call for us a couple times, and is actually, I think you're on call for real, aren't you?
I actually am on call for real, and unfortunately I'm not getting paid to be on call for your podcast.
Yeah, we don't have money in the budget for that, but we do appreciate you being on call for us, and also being on call for real doctor stuff. And if we have to pause the podcast, I'll have to find another brother to finish it with, and you know, a lot of the other brothers really don't know that much about soccer, although he knows some.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, the patients can wait. Most of their problems are not life-threatening, so they can wait an hour for the podcast to be recorded.
Yeah, I agree. And then also, you're on call. Are you on call for baby duty, or is baby taken care of for the night?
Baby's being taken care of for the night, although Molly, my wife, does have a little bit of a GI bug, so we'll see if she makes it through the night.
Yeah, poor Ken, it sounds like his whole crew has GI bugs and things like that. You know, he's down but not out. And you know, there's a lot of soccer to cover over the last few days. And I was afraid. I told him, you know, I don't want to get behind. I mean, we got Christmas to worry about, and then we got extra fixtures. They just pile up here in the Premier League. And you know, with Christmas, we knew we wouldn't be able to get a podcast out in time. But, you know, we still had a good time. I don't know about you, but we did pretty well over here with the squad. They had a good Christmas. How was baby's Christmas?
Baby's first Christmas was good. He got a ton of clothes that he's going to grow out of in about 1 month. But they're all cute, so yeah. That's the most important thing.
And I already saw that he had sock boots, soccer sock boots. That's huge. You could probably keep those for a few months because they'll stretch.
Yeah, I have to say, his three-piece Tottenham uniform made up of Tottenham hat and matching onesie and soccer sock boots is pretty amazing.
Now, with that little baby jersey, how are you putting the name Kane on the back? Are you, like, taking stickers and, like, putting Kane's name on there from, like, mailbox stickers? Or how are you putting his name on the back?
That's a good question. We're working on embroidering it on. Especially, we're trying to get it done as fast as possible after his two hat tricks this week because it's just Kane mania over here right now.
Yeah, and you told me before that the baby just really loves Harry Kane. You know, there was a rough patch when baby was first born where, you know, Tottenham was in a tough stretch. But ever since, you know, the holidays have really been a remedy for that. And I think that's good because baby's probably awake more.
Yeah, he's definitely recovered from that rough Tottenham stretch during his first 2 weeks of life. But I will say, you know, for his sake, that there has not been a season during his lifetime when Arsenal has finished in front of Tottenham. And it's an important point to make, since Ken can't retort.
Yeah, well, he'll retort next week. I promise he will. I talked to him today, and we were trying to put the podcast together, and he's just, I don't know if he slept at all in the last, like, 4 days. And he's just like, there's no way we can do it. And then I reach out to Tyler to see if Tyler can, if he can do it and produce when you and I do the podcast. And Tyler tried to put a water line in his fridge, and he messed something up, and there's just water filling up his kitchen. So, I mean, I think that's kind of his fault. Whereas Ken, like, doesn't have a, you know, nothing Ken could do about it. But I would say that it is Tyler's fault that he's not here.
So after he got all that water on his kitchen floor, how did that conversation go with his wife when he said, do you mind if I do the podcast tonight?
I don't think that that conversation actually happened. I texted him at, like, noon, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'll get back to you when my wife gets home. And I he didn't text me back, and I was like, well, I got Dr. Pete on, you know, he's on call here. I can call him, and we can get this going. And he finally got back to me at, like, 7:15, and he was like, dude, something happened with the water line that was supposed to go to the fridge. I got water everywhere. So I'm guessing that, much like Ken, when Ken called to tell me about his situation, the idea of even pitching a podcast tonight for him would have been pretty much impossible. But thankfully, Dr. Pete, we have a doctor on call, and we have a ton of games, and most of them are really good. And I have really good news for you, which is that the race is back on for fourth place.
I would say
every
that the race
team now fighting for fourth.
I'd say that the race for second, third, and fourth is arguably back on.
Yeah, I know it's definitely back on. I mean, we'll get into it. We have Man United sliding, Chelsea playing pretty well, Liverpool floating very high right now, Tottenham's back, Arsenal's doing all right too, and you know, we got a lot of good teams going around. And there's also another team that's just refusing to lose. And we will get into that as well. We would like to thank everybody for listening this year. This will be our last episode of 2017. So I think it's very fitting that we kick it off with Liverpool versus Arsenal in probably, I mean, would you say this is match of the season? I thought it was probably the best game of the season.
It was definitely up there. I mean, it was the most exciting 10 minutes of the season by far in the middle of that game. Just an incredible match to watch and back and forth. And who are you more frustrated if you're a Liverpool fan or if you're an Arsenal fan?
I think I can answer that actually, because it was Arsenal at home, and with the form they've been on lately, you would have figured, especially at home, that they could take the 3 points here, and not taking the 3 points would mean that they would drop into sixth place. So, you know, having talked to Ken during that game, he was dealing with sick babies then, and was he told me, he asked me the score, and, you know, usually when you're talking to a friend about soccer in America, you always start it with, did you see the score? Because you don't want to ruin it for them in case they're watching on delay, because these games, you know, this is a Friday match. So it was a Friday here at 2:45 in the afternoon. Ken was supposed to be working, but was hanging out with babies who were sick, and I texted him after Liverpool went up 2-0. So Liverpool goes up 2-0 on this one, and that's when Tyler and I were obviously berating Ken in the group chat. You know, Coutinho sneaks in a goal here after Salah. Salah was at the heart of everything, as usual, for Liverpool. He gets a nice shot off. It's deflected, goes up in the air, and Coutinho lobs Cech here. Cech had a pretty poor game overall, but you have to give kudos to Coutinho for his first Premier League-headed goal.
Yeah, did you see it pointing to his head after that?
Yeah, so good. So good. I mean, I think our celebration, we talked about it last time, his celebration where he pulls up his jersey and there's a Barcelona jersey underneath. I thought that was a really good celebration that he did. But we were giving him kudos. Obviously, Coutinho, that Liverpool has been rolling as of late. We argued last episode that Manchester United was the most informed team. And before this week, they were, in terms of wins in matches, like, it won 5-6. But Liverpool's right behind them. And then Liverpool shows up for this game at Arsenal and just takes it to Arsenal for about the first 45 minutes or so. Although, something that you pointed out was that, you know, Arsenal would always have a chance to score because Liverpool still did not look like they want to be responsible in the back.
The amount of, you know, I was surprised when I looked at the number of goals conceded. And they've only conceded 23 goals up to this point, but it seems like they've conceded 12 or 14 just miserable goals that have cost them, you know, 2 points usually, because they've drawn a bunch of games that I feel like they should have won. And this is another example. In this case, I thought it was more that they didn't put the game away when it was 2-0 and they were hammering Arsenal in the first half, and Arsenal just looked deflated. The fans booed them off the field in the first half.
Yeah, that's right.
And they just couldn't finish it off. And then Arsenal caught some steam, and when they catch some steam, man, they are just scary, especially at home.
Yeah, I mean, they went up 2-0. Salah scored the second goal. Like I said, he was unstoppable in this match. He had a third attempt where he basically beat the player, shot the ball. I think it came back. I want to say Cech blocked it. Do you remember what I'm talking about, where Sané then tried to do an overhead kick, even though he was wide open in the box? And Sané's been off. And it's like Salah's on and Sané's off.
Yeah, Sané's had three or four where he could have just passed the ball across the box or even passed the ball into the goal, and he's just tried to get too cute with it, and it's really it's cost Liverpool in a couple of different games.
Yeah, and in this one, Salah still comes back to score in the 52nd minute. That's what put them up 2-0. And then we had Alexis Sanchez basically just wants the ball more than everybody else on this goal, where he just steamrolls the I forget who the right back. I think it was the right back for Liverpool here. The game's so long ago, man. Like, I can't remember who the defender was on it. But Alexis Sanchez steamrolls the defender and heads the ball in from close range. And from there, he kind of picked up Arsenal like he did last year so many times and just started dragging them forward. At that point, 2-1, Liverpool's starting to shake a little bit. And then cutting inside, they get the ball to Granit Xhaka, who rips a shot from 30, and I don't know what Mignolet was doing, but he essentially went up with one hand, and the ball just like, if it hit him in the face, he would have had a better shot for it. A miserable attempt.
Yeah, I loved watching Klopp's facial expressions during this game, because
his jaw comes unhinged.
I thought his head was going to explode after Arsenal scored their third goal.
Oh, yeah. And those three goals were in 5 minutes. The Xhaka goal was all Mignolet's fault. A ball slammed that was straight at him, essentially. A little high, but he goes with one hand instead of two, and the ball just goes right past him. It looked like in the World Cup in 2010 when they were using that Jubilani ball. Remember everybody talked about it? It was like a balloon, and it would move around all the time, and nobody could stop it. It looked like that, except it was the same ball that they've been using all year, pretty much. But it's yellow, and you know, apparently that yellow ball can scare people sometimes, but the ball goes right through Mignolet, and then 3 seconds later, Mesut Ozil with a gorgeous little dink right over the keeper to send Arsenal fans into rapture.
Yeah, I have to say, if you're going to be a top five team and you've got a goalkeeper like Mignolet in there, you are never going to reach your full potential. I mean, that was just a terribly conceded goal. It cost them a whole bunch of goals last year. I mean, you look at the teams that have the strong keepers, David De Gea. I mean, how many times has he bailed you guys out? How many times has Lloris bailed Tottenham out? Although he has been a little bit weak lately, actually. We'll get into that later. But
yeah,
I mean, Mignolet is just, he's like Claudio Bravo last year. I mean, he's just he's going to cost you goals and you're going to leak points simply because you're a goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, the Ozil goal wasn't his fault, nor was the Sanchez goal, but to allow the Xhaka goal, I mean, that is just, we always talk, you and I, we always talk about value over replacement in baseball or war, where you're trying to basically define a player based on whether or not they are positive or negatively impacting you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And for me, I feel like Mignolet is probably just a smidge of negative impact as a goalie, as opposed to a player like De Gea, who is a ton of positive impact.
I think it unsettles their defense. You know, when you have a goalie back there and you're not sure what he's doing. You know, did you see the one where they crossed it in and he almost punched it into his own goal, had to punch it over, and he looked
absolutely ridiculous? Yeah, it was that high floating cross, and he didn't know what to do with it.
That ball was in the air for like 20 seconds.
Yeah, it was from the, it was that like that old Ronaldinho World Cup goal on the free kick where it was just floating way up there. And unlike David Seaman, I mean, at least Mignolet got it out of there. It would have dropped in behind him and would have been an even worse goal conceded than the first one he did. And the funny thing about it is, you know, you were just talking about Mignolet leaking goals and leaking points. Klopp's team have 8 clean sheets in the last 14 games. So they actually have been playing much better.
Yeah, I was shocked when I looked and saw, so Tottenham have conceded 20 goals and Liverpool's conceded 23 goals. So, I mean, they're not that far apart, and conceding 23 goals is not that far off, you know, the other teams other than Man City. Man U's let up some goals lately, but 23 is not bad. It's just when you watch the goals they let up, so many of them are just terrible goals.
Yeah, and I mean, so the game goes to 3-2 here, and just watching the Arsenal fans, you knew what it meant to them. They went down 2-0, and the record that I heard was that they had not come back to win in a game that they were losing by 2-0 at halftime. They had only done it two times in the last 50.
Wow.
Which is a really, really bad statistic for a team as accomplished as Arsenal is and a manager as accomplished as Arsene Wenger is, but is also very telling to the real problem that is with Arsenal. And Ken and I argue this all the time. He would be very angry with me right now. But, you know, like, they seem to lack spine when it really counts. And, you know, even Ken, when the cards are down, he acknowledges that as well. He calls it same old Arsenal. And to me, you know, having texted him back and forth when they got up 3-2, and him saying, that's great, but I'll be really, really pissed if Liverpool scores again. And then sure enough, you know, 12 minutes later, Arsenal concedes a goal that Cech kind of stopped, and then the ball just bounced in after a hard shot just dropped in. I mean, he's, you knew it was coming, though. I mean, Arsenal or Liverpool, you knew there were more goals coming in that game.
Yeah, and, you know, when they went up 3-2, I mean, everybody watching in the stands, everybody at home thought that game was over. Arsenal was going to roll to 4-2, 5-2. To let Liverpool get back in that game and sneak a draw out of there, I mean, that place was rocking after that third goal.
Oh, yeah.
And to just not be able to finish off the game, I mean, I'm sure Ken was just irate at the end of the game, even though it was an incredibly exciting game. But to not be able to finish them off, I mean, you got to feel disappointed.
Yeah, now, for you, if you are down in this match 3-2, or you're trying to hang on to it 3-2, and you take Theo Walcott and you bring him on for Alexis Sanchez, what kind of message does that send to your squad? I mean, Theo Walcott coming in that game when you're already up, just, it made no sense to me at all. None. And I just, you know, I know Ken would agree with that part of it, but I don't understand the Theo Walcott sub. I think Wenger takes credit for that one.
I'm always shocked when these top five teams take off their best player with 20 minutes left. You're telling me Alexis Sanchez at 80% or 70%, if that's what he's at, is not better than Theo Walcott. I mean, they do the same thing with Hazard, and I don't understand it. You know, you're paying these guys and they can't finish a 90-minute game, and you know, they're your best player.
Yeah, I mean, we won't spend any more time on this game, but yeah, I mean, it's crazy to me, and Sanchez obviously is really upset, and, you know, he'll get a chance starting January 1st to pick which club he wants to go to next, and we've already talked about it ad nauseum, but I don't believe it'll be Arsenal. So, 3-3 is the ending score of this game, the game of the week. You know, Arsenal had maybe one of the reasons that they're beginning to rotate more. They had the Carabao Cup game in the midweek on Tuesday, but coming into that Friday match, I mean, that's a very, you know, short window to rotate players. Arsenal wins that game, though, 1-0. Real ugly, scrappy win. Danny Welbeck scores, Pete, so, like, you know that's ugly. You know, that being said, I would have taken a 1-0 win, and I didn't get one from United, who lost 2-1 to Bristol City, hit the post twice, and you know, Chelsea wins 2-1, City gets through on penalties, everybody else gets through except for United, and United go into the weekend starting to slide a little bit, starting to slide, and sure enough, Manchester United 2, Leicester City 2, where Leicester City blitzed them and, you know, got that Jamie Vardy party started nice and early.
Yeah, I tell you, Mahrez is one of my favorite players to watch this year that I'd never heard of before. I'm excited to see him in the World Cup, but I think he's one of those guys who's probably going to end up on Barcelona or Real Madrid. He just looks like one of those type players who can change the game in a heartbeat, and he's just so fast on the ball. I mean, that counterattack was classic. Leicester City came out of nowhere, and he just stopped and stood Smalling up and made him look foolish by passing the ball off to Vardy for an easy finish.
And yes, Smalling got worked in this game. So yeah. This is a miserable game. You know, you and I, we had talked earlier in the week about who had a better defense, Manchester United or Tottenham, for the best Premier League defenses in the league. And I took my team out of the running after this game. Just, I mean, the goals that we are allowing right now are so poor. And you could say that's because Bailly isn't in there. But, you know, Bailly, he's been hurt a lot. So you can't really blame it on one player for not being there. And Smalling is a very experienced player. He's 28, 29, has been on United since he was about 20, and has played in huge matches. And for him, you know, that first goal, you could argue, okay, well, he, you know, was one-on-one with the guy, basically, and help was on the way. So he had to account for two players. But, like you said, he got stood up, beaten, and then the guy, Rotten Mahrez, just passed it for the Vardy party, and boom, 1-0. So, yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of blame there. United actually comes back and scores twice. Mata showing up as somebody with some creativity, finally looking good for United. And I was very excited after Mata's second goal when he bent a free kick in. That was a gorgeous free kick. You know, I'm thinking 2-1. Leicester City grabs a red card. Pretty dumb red card. Did you see that red card?
Yeah, it was terrible.
A lot of real dumb red cards this year. Another red card here in the 73rd minute, and this is Manchester United, and with this kind of club, they need to be winning this game 4-1 when you're up a man. And Jose, for me, needs to be able to get that team into that position. Lingard did hit the post in this one, but United goes into the 90th minute and stoppage time up 2-1, just trying to scrape through like they've done with so many games this year, to much to my own personal disappointment, you know, setting up shop when you're up a man because you couldn't manage a goal. That's to me, that's management, and that's a real problem. And then to have a free kick in the 94th minute, a deep free kick, get floated in, ball dropped within De Gea's six. So you were saying before that there's a goalie error there. And, you know, De Gea's been really good. But watching Smalling pull up on the ball and, like, put his hands up so that his keeper could come get it when there must not have been a shout because they didn't, you know, I didn't see a shout. No one talked about a shout afterwards. But I told you before, Smalling's 6'4". It's his job to just get the ball out for the last kick of the game. And he did not. And Leicester City scores as his man, Harry Maguire, just goes in and pokes the ball in because he's alone.
Yeah, that was just a despicable
tie
for you guys. And, you know, Mourinho had to be just furious because he's so good at putting games to bed. And this one, I actually turned it off after the 85th minute because I was like, oh, this game's over. They got a red card. And I looked at my phone to look at the highlights and could not believe that they had come back and tied it. I was like, how did they even get a shot off?
I was at the Ravens game. I was standing in line for the Ravens game going in, and then I was at the Ravens game for the end of this game, and I just kept reloading my phone because I was going to watch on delay, and then to see it go 2-2 in the 94th minute, and I mean, the swear words at that point. And I'm with my neighbor who's Dutch and his father-in-law who's English. It's their first like American football match, and I'm trying to be like put on a good show for them. But it's raining, and then Manchester United barfs up the lead, and I was in a terrible mood. Terrible mood.
I'm sure.
Yeah, so just brutal. And United's sliding now. The title race is already over, but we would have had a nice, comfortable set in second place going into the new year. We're exactly halfway through the season at that point, and I would have been okay. Not happy at all, but okay, because second place matters. Ken and I argue about this, but second place matters.
Absolutely. No, I think second place is really important, especially for a team like Tottenham to finish second in front of Arsenal. I mean, that's a big deal for the fans. Man United, you know, there's a lot more pressure, but still, I mean, there's a difference between second and fourth. If you're in fourth place and you're Manchester United coach, you're probably going to get fired, especially if you didn't do anything in, you know, the Champions League. But the second place is definitely a different story.
Yeah, and I think, you know, things are different now. It's one of those things where fourth place, you just have to finish in the top four for it to be not a successful season, but to be a season where bare minimum, I believe, is to get into Europe. And for Manchester United, I believe that they should finish in second place, but I could see them finishing in fourth place. I mean, they are sliding right now, and they're sliding in a way, I mean, anytime a team's in poor form, it's easy to get really down on them, but they're sliding to a point where, you know, people are talking about how Mao is starting to drag the team down, and Mao hasn't been happy. The guy doesn't smile. Like, he hasn't been happy in, like, since he started at United. We talked about this before, and now with the team also sliding and crapping away the Bristol City game and crapping away the Leicester City game, and then later barely getting a home draw to Burnley, you have to say that United is the team that has taken the baton from the other top six members to be the team in quote-unquote crisis right now.
Yeah, I think they really lost the wind out of their sails with that Man City game. I think they were just crushed by that result, and they still have not fully recovered from that, and you can see that in the results. And I'm not sure. This is the first time this week that I've thought that Man City might not finish in second. Like, as a Tottenham fan, I'm thinking, okay, second place is open, up for grabs. You know, if Man City keeps sliding like this, anybody could overtake him for that
Man
second
United,
place.
Yeah. Yeah. Man City doesn't slide.
Yeah, sorry, Man United.
Yeah, I mean, United, that's definitely true, and it's worrisome to me. We talked before about finishing in first or fourth. Fourth place, for one thing, has to play a qualifying Champions League match, a two-legged affair, which begins to add on matches at a time where you don't need to start adding them on yet. It's in August. And, you know, you don't want to have to play those extra matches if you don't have to. Secondly, if you finish in fourth, you enter in the lowest part of a Champions League draw, which means your group could suck, and then you get knocked out. You know? Like, it's a big deal to finish second or fourth. I don't care what Ken says. But United,
yeah, it makes
right
it
now,
more fun. You know, yeah. If you're, say, especially if you're a fan and you don't like fans from Arsenal or Man United, then you've got some bragging rights for them going into the next season.
Yeah, and that part of it stings as well, especially as a United fan. But United sliding here, go into the following weekday, the Tuesday match after the Saturday match, and basically at home can't put it past Burnley, despite having 23 shots, 6 on frame, and Burnley only having 2 shots in this game. United still manages to only scrape out a 2-2 draw because of Jesse Lingard. And, you know, we've been talking about how Jose Mourinho has been extremely negative since arriving at Manchester United and how he can dampen some of the younger players. But you pointed out that actually he's developed a few of them. Lingard, for example. I mean, Lingard, I don't know if it's a good thing, but Lingard is currently our most creative player.
If I had told you before the season that Jesse Lingard was going to be your first half MVP, what would you have told me?
I would have said, I would have cried, probably. I probably would have cried. Yeah, it's you know, he's a player that apparently tactically is very sound. Like, he is very big on what the manager wants him to do, which is a big deal. But in terms of talent, if you're trying to compete with Manchester City, and it, you know, this is a difficult conversation to get into, but if you're comparing your creative force or forces against theirs, I mean, right now your number 10 is Jesse Lingard, and their number 10s are Kevin De Bruyne, who's been the best player in the Prem so far, and David Silva. It's not even close. Like, how do you expect to compete when you have Jesse Lingard as your number 10 in form, because Henrik Mkhitaryan has fallen out with the coach and doesn't look like he can handle the Prem, and Mata is too slow and has not been creative, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic looks even more slow and doesn't seem to be all the way back yet. I mean, Lingard right now for United, he's their 10 versus Manchester City's Kevin De Bruyne, basically. You know, that's, it shouldn't be a direct correlation, but you absolutely have to look at that.
Well, you know, you look at Lingard, and sometimes it just takes the right coach to bring out all the right traits. You might not have seen any of it before. I mean, look at Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
I mean, until Pep came in, that guy looked like a complete waste of talent and speed. But, you know, under the right coach, all of a sudden that guy's arguably the most lethal finisher on the best team in the league.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you look at the way Pep has taken players and optimized them, maximized them. And, you know, Jose's done that a little bit differently than Pep has. You have to give Jose credit for taking a lot of the same talent that he had before when he came in. I mean, he has added to it, but we're talking about the two players, Ashley Young, making Ashley Young relevant again.
Yeah.
You know, that's an amazing feat. Ashley Young was barely in the squad the last 2 years. For him to be relevant as a left back, Antonio Valencia has developed into what I believe is the best right back in the league right now. Going forward and playing defensively, not as good defensively as he is going forward, but still an important part of it. And Ander Herrera, for instance, with his renaissance, Fellaini with his renaissance. I mean, you have Lingard fits that same kind of role. You have to give him credit for that, whereas Pep knows the type of player that he wants and has mainly brought in players or taken players who have supreme talent already, i.e. De Bruyne and Silva, guys who have shown it before. De Bruyne was practically a player of the year candidate before he got hurt with Pellegrini's squad. But at the same time, Pep has actually brought in a lot of players as opposed to developing them as much as even Jose has.
Yeah, I think individually that's true. At Man U, Pep's been better at getting the most out of his players individually. But Man City, Pep has developed a system with all the players in place
that he wants, has
destroyed Man City's system this year in terms of, you know, efficiency.
Yeah, no, it's definitely true. United draw 2-2. City, on the other hand, as they have done nonstop, City just wins. They just win. On Saturday, they go up against Bournemouth and they win 4-0. Not a lot to say about these games anymore, honestly, Pete. Like, Aguero scores twice, Sterling and Danilo score.
Yeah, what do you make of, did you hear the rumors about Aguero potentially being unhappy in Man City?
Yeah, I mean, that's very possible. He's basically, Pep has taken whatever ego Aguero has, and to me, he hasn't always been like a guy that you hear about an ego with. Like, he seems to be, I mean, it helps that he's possibly the top two, top three striker in the league and has been and is super clutch for the last 6 years or so. So he never really had to worry about anything else. But since the beginning, Pep has told him, if you don't want to be here, you can leave. And you need to do what I want you to do. And Aguero, quietly, nothing in the media, I would imagine, is tired of sitting. You know, like, is tired of starting games on the bench. He is scoring when he's in there, though. I mean, he scores twice. He scores again today. He is scoring, but whether or not he will go, he might. I mean, Pep likes to prove points, like a lot of managers do, and you could see Aguero get moved out. It's just, I don't know where he would go. He's an Atletico Madrid guy, so going to Real Madrid for him is not really an option. I mean, you say that, but... You know,
yeah, I wonder if he would PSG. End up at another... He's been so successful in the Premier League. I mean, I wouldn't... I'd love to see him jump to another Premier League team like Chelsea or Man U.
Well, he's really a loyal guy, and I don't think he would do that. I believe in that kind of stuff. Ken does not. Everything you hear about him, I couldn't imagine him going to United. His contract isn't up anytime soon, so it would have to be a sale, and I can't imagine Man City sanctioning that sale. But you never know. If you don't have any takers, a few years ago, Manchester United paid double what everybody else was asking for or offering for Robin Van Persie off of Arsenal. And Van Persie ended up winning him a title. So, it's possible. I would be very surprised, though. City wins 4-0 here, continues their ridiculous role. And they also won in their Carabao Cup game. They took a squeaker away in penalty shootout again. You and I have talked about the breaks. And I always point back to the fact that in most of these games, they are winning. Like, they are mashing the other team and kicking the door down at the end. They just get a late goal out of it. But getting through two penalty shootouts, you definitely have to say that there's some breaks going on there in the Carabao Cup. But when you're winning every game, I mean, that's what happens.
Yeah, they've certainly, it looks like their season this year, everything off the coast is going their way. You know, every single ball rolls in the right direction. So, you almost, it's hard to imagine them ever not winning again.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, they come up against Newcastle today at Newcastle, and they barely win. It took Otamendi taking a ball off the line for them to win 1-0, but you just knew that they were going to win. That's the way they are right now, and, I mean, you look forward a little bit. Let's see, their next match that they have is on Sunday, I believe, the 31st. They play Crystal Palace at home. I mean, Crystal Palace is plucky, but can you imagine them getting points out of this one? It's a difficult game.
Yeah, hard to imagine. But eventually, they will tie and have a run of form. Do you think, you know, there's a lot being said about whether they can match Arsenal and have a completely undefeated season. But that season, Arsenal had something like 8 or 9 ties.
Yeah.
So, I mean, even if Man City loses a game, to me, the city, it's still a much more successful season. I mean, the amount of points they've gotten, the amount of goals they've scored, how they've just destroyed everybody is way more impressive than, you know, having, quote, an undefeated season if you have 9 draws.
Well, you know what? They could have 9 draws in the second half of the season. So I'm not gonna make that jump for you. I'm not going to make that jump for you. But, yeah, so they just continue winning. I had my City friend James texted me a bunch of stuff about how much he enjoys the love from the podcast. And honestly, I don't want to give any love. I don't want to, but I don't have a choice as they continue their winning streak. Speaking of winning streaks, and Dr. Pete, this is good for you and baby. Tottenham's starting to show up. I feel like you have a rattle in your hand. Is that your watch?
No.
Is it a baby rattle?
It is not a baby rattle.
I feel like something's, like, shaking over there. I just feel like you're playing with a baby rattle. Anyway, so Tottenham, though, smashes Burnley 3-0 at Burnley. And as you alluded to in the beginning of the show, so Harry Kane was closing in on Leo Messi, who has the Christmas season off with Spain. On his record, which was it 54 goals in the calendar year of 2017?
Yeah, Messi had 56. Sorry, Messi had 54.
Yes. And going into the Burnley match, Harry Kane had 50? Question mark?
Correct.
And Harry Kane decided that he would enjoy a hat trick in this match.
Yeah, Harry just went berserk on Burnley. At Burnley, and Burnley hadn't conceded more than one goal in any English Premier League match so far this season. They've been very stingy, and Harry just went to town on them. And really, it was a huge win for us because they're right next to us on the table, and we had been in the slide for a while. And this was just a critical match, and we just ended up destroying them, putting them away early because of Harry.
Yeah, Harry went berserk in this one and did his... He's got a great scream after he scores. I love his scream. It's just like both hands, and he just screams at you. Like, he screams into the crowd. A nice win for them. 3-0 here. Anything else you want to add? This is a pretty big win, as Burnley was, you know, they've been in the top six the entire time. This knocked them out of the top six. But, you know, Tottenham's starting to pick up points now, and it's due in a large part to Harry Kane's form. I mean, he crushes Burnley pretty much single-handedly, and then they get a more team-oriented win in the midweek where they have, they win, what was it, 5-2?
5-2.
Yeah, they win 5-2 on Tuesday, and it wasn't just Harry Kane, although he did score a hat-trick in this one, but Dele Alli and Son and Eriksen all look good in this, and that's probably more important even than Harry Kane scoring 6 goals in 2 matches.
Yeah, I think he's given the team such a lift, and Ali's play seems to have elevated. Eriksen's been serving nice balls back in there, and the whole team looks like they're ready to go on a run at this point. Although, we did concede 2 bad goals in this one. Specifically, Lloris looked a little shaky the last 3 or 4 games. just hasn't made the saves I'm used to seeing him make. I think it was in this game where Rose headed one back and he almost bungled it into his own goal.
Yeah, I saw that. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, and the game was close at that point. And, you know, I'm not used to seeing him struggle like that, so I hope that's not something we see going forward. And Tottenham has been scoring a lot lately, but their defense this year is not the same as it was last year. They're missing, they've really missed Alderweireld. They've tried to plug Dyer back in there.
Oh, yeah, and Dyer returning the midfield in that game is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we have Sanchez back there and Vertonghen, I feel like we're unlikely to concede goals. But when Dyer's back there, he's conceded some big goals. He doesn't quite have the pace or the awareness to hang with. He's just not used to playing center back with the cheeky strikers on the top five squads, and we've definitely gotten punished by that.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, especially Dyer's play. I think he's leaked a lot of goals, honestly. Yeah. And, you know, if you're an England fan, which we might have to be this summer, if you're an England fan, watching Harry Kane's form is very encouraging. Dele Alli has half a season to return to where he needs to be. But maybe even more importantly than that is the idea that you know for sure that Eric Dyer's best position is defensive midfielder.
Yes.
That's important for them. It's important for Tottenham, too, but I believe that they already knew that. Whereas England was kind of making up a decision. You know, they had a bunch of defenders that are in and out of form, and they're not really sure who you want to play at center back. But I think you can rule Eric Dyer out as a first-string center back option if you're England.
Yeah, I think he's proved that to everybody at this point. Yeah. Let me get back to Harry Kane for a minute.
Fine. You did tell me that you want to go on a Harry Kane rant, and I said I would allow it. So I know you've amassed a ton of statistics that are absurd and much better than even his primal screen.
Do I have a time limit on my Harry Kane rant since Ken's not here to check me?
He will check you after the episode, so I'll let you go. I'll let you know if it gets out of control.
So, first of all, I was online looking today for my number 9 England jersey since the U.S. has terribly missed out on this World Cup. So, mm-hmm. I'm definitely all in on England, especially they've got a bunch of Tottenham players. So,
yeah,
we'll be
true.
Excited to see if Harry Kane takes the next step. Do you think that Harry Kane could possibly take England on a deep run? Just an aside real quick. 10-second aside.
Just Harry Kane? No. But if Raheem Sterling and Dele Alli can get any kind of form going, this is so dangerous, dude. This is so dangerous. If you can get any kind of, or the English media right now, if you can get any kind of form out of the two of them and remove Joe Hart from the goal, then I will say maybe. That is what
okay.
I'll say.
Joe maybe. Hart's not going to start, by the way. You don't have to worry
no,
about
Pickford,
that.
No, Pickford's been playing really well for everyone.
Ken deep sixed his career. He's done.
That's very true. Ken did.
Southgate had been listening to your podcast. And,
as he should.
And he has decided Joe Hart has no place in the team.
And Eric Dyer is defensive midfielder. That's new. Gareth, write that down. Gareth, write that down.
But back to Harry real quick.
Continue with your Harry rant.
So, 56 goals for club and country 2017. That's in 52 games. Messi scored 54 goals in 64 games. Okay? Mm. Harry Kane missed a month for a busted malleolar, which I'm not a doctor, but I think that's somewhere in your ankle.
You are a doctor. That is in your ankle. So you better know where that is.
But he missed a month, and
yeah.
He's still
and
topped
he was,
all
he was
clubs
still hobbled.
In Europe.
He was still hobbled. He played poorly for a few games after. He missed time.
And nobody else has topped that goal list between 2010 and 2016 except for Messi and Ronaldo.
Yes.
I mean, it's a really exceptional feat for Harry. The other unbelievable thing is, did you see that meme our brother sent us about how many hat tricks he had?
Brother Joey's hat trick meme. Sure.
Eight hat tricks for Harry Kane. Next best striker was 2 hat tricks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's unbelievable.
It's absurd. Absolutely.
That's
absurd.
Basically, I mean, you win those games all on your own.
Yeah, and he absolutely did.
One last stat, by the way. 2012, guess how many goals Messi had? Do you remember how many he had?
God. 70?
91 goals. How stupid is that?
You're going to upset
and
Ken.
One last thing. This is really going to piss Ken off. This is my favorite part. So they asked Lloris what he thought about if Harry Kane was the best striker he's ever played with, including he played for the French team.
Yeah, yeah.
Henry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He said, quote, "I've played with a lot of top strikers, and he is the best I've ever played with," end quote.
So I will say this part of it. I think that Harry Kane still doesn't get the love he deserves. I believe that, you know, Lewandowski is considered better than him as he's a pure not. Number nine. And he's not. He's not better than him. Lewandowski plays in Germany, and he plays for the team. It's like having Manchester City, except there's no top six to play against. You know, there's a couple teams here and there that will put up fights, but most of the time, Bayern wins that league by 15 points, you know? Yeah. And Lewandowski is constantly being served those goals. Whereas I think that Harry Kane is deeper than that and deserves more love than he gets. I mean, he's what, 24? 25?
24 years old.
Yeah, he's 24. And I believe he has 97 league goals. Is that right, or does he have more than that?
He might have more than that. He's got 97 sounds right, because this is his... Yeah.
Look that up. I'm gonna finish my rant. So he has a ton of goals, and all of a sudden you're talking about Harry Kane at the age of 24 as being the best. It's dangerous to do this, Michael Owen. It's dangerous to do this, but as the guy who could surpass Alan Shearer's league goal record of, I believe it's 260. Wayne Rooney, for instance, sits at 200 goals. Wayne Rooney's been playing full-time since he was 16. And Harry Kane, I believe, is already past halfway to Wayne Rooney. I mean, there's a lot that can go in. You don't want to necessarily take a look at pace all the time, but, you know, when you have a guy who's on this kind of record scoring, an off year for him would be 30 goals right now. That'd be an
off
year.
You know, saying that he's going to pass Alan Shearer, that's, I don't think he's ever going to pass him. He may not even stay in the Prem for another year.
Yeah, that's very true.
But the fact, so he's got 96 goals in 135 appearances. This is his third year where he's well on his way to winning the Premier League Golden Boot. The only one that I think has really stands a chance at this point is, what's his name for Liverpool?
Salah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's 6 or 7 goals in front of anybody else. So,
yeah.
But just a run of form for 3 years, maybe even going into 5 years, I mean, he's got to be up there for best pure striker runs of all time, up there with Henry, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I don't have the numbers versus Henry, but yeah, you're right. I mean, the ridiculous Harry Kane statistics are, I mean, easy to access and amazing. And Harry Kane, he picked his team up. Tottenham now sits in fifth place, but they are 5 points out of third and 6 points out of second and playing better than the second and third place teams of Manchester United and Chelsea. We move to the Chelsea matches if you're done with your Harry Kane rant.
I'm done.
Okay, we're going across London to Chelsea. Chelsea squeaks out an ugly Carabao Cup win earlier in the week, but moves on and heads for trophy season as Conte tries to win something other than a league title. And they tie Big Sam's Everton 0-0. Pickford looking good in this one to surpass Hart as the England number one.
Yeah, and this is your classic game where everything's going right for Chelsea last season. They would have won this game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, have a ton of shots. Just the ball just doesn't get over the line. Everton packs it in and ended up with another draw.
Did you know that Big Sam has not lost yet?
I saw that. I couldn't believe it. And it you know, it's funny. When I'm in my car and my Bluetooth kicks in automatically, it plays your old episodes on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to, like, episode 12, and you guys are going berserk on how Everton's going to get relegated because they were so bad.
And now they're in, like, ninth.
And now they're in, like, ninth place.
Yeah. I don't like when you listen to our old episodes, because a lot of times you bring up, like, previous rants that we've gone on.
Yeah, if you want to get a good listen, you got to go back and listen to episode one, or the predictions episode when you're talking about Pep. You don't want to listen to that one.
You know what? I don't back down from that, because it is, you know, we make our statements. We stick to what we say. And yes, we are going to be wrong sometimes, but we've been right a lot. We've been right about our first episode when we're talking about how Liverpool can fix their defense. We talk about Chelsea getting fatigued in the league. And we also talk about Manchester City not winning the league. But we mainly, we've been pretty right overall.
No, you guys have definitely hit on a bunch of them. That's the only big thing that stood out, you know, from your predictions.
We deserve it. I'll take pies to the face for Manchester City. Who can predict they're going to win 18 matches in a row?
Yeah, nobody can predict that.
Yeah, but back to Chelsea. A couple things about Chelsea. Chelsea has actually taken 29 points from their last 36, which is very impressive despite this Everton draw. And a couple cool stats. Your boy Morata, we're going to call him your boy. You get to keep Morata. I don't want him. Ken doesn't want him. I guess he's Tyler's boy. We'll give him a Tyler. Tyler's boy Morata has 6 goals assisted from Cesar Azpilicueta, who plays as a center back mainly. And Azpilicueta is the only player in the league to have 6 assists and not play for Manchester City. It's the same ball, obviously. It's like that weird cross from the center, which is really hard to hit. And he bends it in, and Morata heads it in. But 6 times, which ties Chelsea for the all-time one player to another, I guess that's how you would say it, one player to another assist lead, with Fabregas to Diego Costa in 2014-15, where they had 6, and a guy named Frank Lampard to Didier Drogba in 2010. They've already tied that combination. Furthermore, no team in Europe's Big 5 divisions have more league goals scored by Spanish players outside of Chelsea, who have 20 goals from Spanish players, which is level with Real Sociedad. That includes Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid. Chelsea's got the little Spanish thing going on there.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. The fact that they've only had 6 assists between some of the classic combo guys they've had in the past, like Lampard and Drogba.
Yeah.
Like, they've never had more than 6 assists in a year. That's pretty incredible.
It is, and it's not like they weren't trying. I mean, they're really good. So, yeah, I mean, it's very impressive by Chelsea, quietly putting together a little bit of a form, and I read something on Football 365 that said the crisis, in quotes, has been passed from Chelsea, from Tottenham, and now has been passed to Manchester United. As Chelsea's kind of out of it, they do draw this Everton game, but you have to say that it took a great effort from Pickford, and they had about 23 shots, 8 on frame, and it just wasn't their day. But they've been playing fine. They sit in third place. They are 1 point behind a staggering Manchester United, and they are 4 points clear from a smoking hot Liverpool, a smoking hot Tottenham, and 6 points clear, 8 points clear of Arsenal. Arsenal does have a game in hand. So you have to say that Chelsea looks like they're going to stay in the top 3. Whether or not that'll keep Conte around is another question, but they do win 2-0 at Brighton on Tuesday, which is a nice finish for them. Morata and Alonso get on the scoreboard. Anything you want to say about that match at all, or anything you want to say about Chelsea?
You know, I think that Chelsea season is going to go one of two ways. So they're going to compete for that second and third spot. And like you said, they've quietly amassed all those results. They've dropped points here and there, but overall, you know, they're 1 point out of second place.
Yeah.
And, you know, their season could end up with them competing for that, or it just goes in an absolute tailspin. You know, they get a bad result in their Champions League game. Conte is so volatile.
Yeah.
And you've always talked about how he, you know, when he loses it, I could just see the team going haywire and, you know, losing 4 or 5 games in a row and just going in a complete slide. And he decides he's going to go back to Italy finally. You could flip a coin on the season. I think they'll go one of those two ways. One thing I'd like to... I was looking at the fixture schedule, and Chelsea play Arsenal three times because of the Caribou Cup semifinals in the next month and a half.
Yeah, you just knew that was going to happen. And that is the only positive thing I can say about the two of our teams, United and Tottenham, being eliminated from the competition is then you don't have to have another game where you play Manchester City, Arsenal, or Chelsea to move on in a cup match, which will probably come at a time when you've just played 10 matches in the last 25 days. You know what I mean? So that is the only positive thing I can think of out of that. But not having to play against one of those teams is big. And, you know, with Arsenal-Chelsea, honestly, Arsenal has had Conte. I mean, they had the FA Cup final, and they had a couple other results. They did win the last matchup. I think Chelsea won the last matchup. I can't even remember. Maybe they tied. I think they tied. Too many matches in the last month. But you'd have to say that Chelsea looks like they are good to stay as long as they don't start sliding. You know, you can't rule it out, but they have to keep their heads above water. And especially, you know, with the way that Liverpool is playing, I don't think we mentioned the Liverpool midweek game when we talked about Liverpool. They won 5-0 over Swansea in an absolute thrashing. An absolute thrashing in this one.
Yeah, Liverpool, when they're on, I mean, they're just unstoppable. This might be a good time to talk about their new, shiny new transfer.
That's a good point.
Hot off the press.
Brother Joey sends a text message today out around noon saying that Van Dijk had signed with, Virgil van Dijk, Southampton center back, had signed with Liverpool. And you have to say that I thought the Naby Keita money, which that was that signing they made right before transfer day for like 55 or 60 million, but doesn't go into effect until next summer. And both Ken and I were like, what the hell are you doing? You need a center back. And there was a list of 20 or so odd center backs that they could have signed after Klopp's rant about who could we have signed.
That was a good episode.
That was a good episode. Now they've signed Virgil van Dijk. He is a commanding center back, very large, I want to say like 6'3", and wins headers. Like I said, commanding, which is huge for them. And whether or not he can be a difference for them in the Champions League and in the league play to stop allowing those soft goals is one thing. But you have to say for sure that Liverpool has given Klopp what he needs, or at least monetarily, it should be enough that you have to put Liverpool now in a conversation with the spenders of people who have pressure on them.
Yeah, my question is, how much would Van Dijk have costed in the offseason? 40 million pounds? I mean, that's what the premier backs
Listen,
were going
50.
For.
They always said 50 plus, yeah. But you never know.
And now you paid 70, was it 75?
I'm not sure.
I saw 75 and I saw 100 million out there.
They
but either way,
say,
in January, you're definitely overpaying for him.
Yeah, by about 20%. Whether or not United will actually dip in and try to get a creative player is another question. But yeah, 75 million is the deal that I'm seeing too, man. That is crazy. I wait for the dust to settle before I commit to that, but that is
Do you know who the big
absurd.
Winners were in 2017? The agents. Those guys did not do any more work in 2017 than they did in 2016, mm-hmm. and they made twice as much money. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah,
they didn't do anything. All they
million.
Did was, there was just a feeding frenzy, and they fed it, and
yep.
they just made...
All the big sharks came in with their money, their bags full of money. Their bags full of money, like the Gutmans. You know, like, the Gutmans were sitting there, and just Leo Marvin swings in with his bag full of money and just snatches it out from under them. And going into this week, you remember that Conte said, someone has to sign Van Dijk. It can't be Man City.
Yeah, Klopp was listening.
Yeah, they were listening for 75.
How desperate is
million.
That when you're telling all the other teams not to sign somebody?
Yeah,
just reeks of desperation.
Yeah, that was not great. But Liverpool, it should be a big boost for them, and they're playing well right now. They sit on 38 points. They still, you had mentioned before about draws. They still have 8 draws.
Yeah, those draws, and I heard them interviewing Klopp, and he was talking about how he felt like every one of those draws was not them sort of eking out a draw. Felt like they should have won the game, and I think that's true for a lot of those matches. So if they can turn those draws into wins in the second half, look out. And they can make a deep run in the Champions League if Van Dijk slots in well and Mignolet doesn't, you know, have any howlers.
Yeah, you have to wonder now, with the amount of money that they've spent and having already basically spent 50 to 60 million on Keita next transfer season, how much money will they have next season to improve? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you want to get Mignolet, you want to get somebody else besides Mignolet, but right now the market is ridiculous. You're going to have to pay at least 30 for a goalie. I mean, that's what Ederson cost, and Ederson's not a shot stopper. He's a system keeper with great feet. He's not a bad shot stopper, but he's not what Liverpool would need. They don't need a player with their feet. They need a guy, a last line of defense. And then to find those kind of guys, you're talking about the Oblaks and the Atletico Madrid keeper Oblak, and maybe I don't think Donnarumma would ever go anywhere. The young Milan keeper that is next for Italy. But you're going to have to pay a ton of money for a keeper, and it could be that Liverpool's going for broke here.
Yeah, I'll be very interested to see if, because of all the teams, they really need to replace their goalkeeper more than any other top five teams. I think Mignolet is just not worthy of a spot that far up in the table.
Absolutely true. Speaking of the table, Manchester City, 20 played, 19 wins, 1 draw, 49
absurd
goal differential, plus 49, 58 points through 20 matches. Manchester United sits a full 15 points behind them with 43 points, plus 27 goal differential. A little bit surprising. Lukaku has been crap on a stick for about the last 10 matches, so it'll be interesting to see what United can do. I mean, he's also played in almost every game. Like, sit the dude down for a minute. Not to get on a side rant when we're getting ready to close the show out here, but God, sit him down for a minute. Yeah, just sit down, bro. Lingard is the man, obviously, but United's still in second place. If you told me in the beginning of the season that we'd be in second place at a little bit past the halfway point now, I would have said, okay, that's cool. We finished in sixth last year. However, you would have probably left out the fact that we are down 15 points to Manchester City, and Manchester City is doing nothing more than being the best team in the world. And as Ken said, starting to, at the very beginning, make their case for being one of the best teams ever. You and I talked about this before. They have to make a deep Champions League run. They have to win more than one trophy.
If you're going to
win two or three trophies, at least two.
Yeah, I mean, it's great if you win the Prem and you have the most goals ever and the most points ever, but you get knocked out in the first knockout round in the Champs League, or the second, you don't win the FA Cup, you know, all of a sudden, it's not quite as star-studded season. Can you imagine if Man United won the Champions League, what Mourinho's press conference would look like when they asked him what he thought about whether he'd rather win the Champions League or the Premier League?
Well,
how fun that would be. It's unlikely, but I'm just hypothetical.
Some people, they want to win the league, and that's fine, but I like the Champions League. It is good competition, and I'm fantastic, so we win both. You know, I decided no league this year. I'm specifically keeping track of European trophies now, and you know, we have more than anyone else. Thank you. That's probably about how it would go. And he would probably mention something else more specific to City. But, yeah, I mean, you can't put anything down past City right now, but they do have to make a run if they want to be one of these teams, best of all-time teams. Chelsea sits in third, 42 points.
Real quick on Man City. So they're one win off the all-time wins
record
of 19, which was Pep's. So three out of the six all-time streaks are Pep's, by the way.
Yeah, the league streaks.
For those who are counting.
Absolutely.
Isn't that amazing that nobody's ever won 20 games in a row?
I thought Real Madrid did it last year, but I was wrong. That was all comps, I think. They did 19, I think. But it wasn't
you figured
league,
somebody,
it was all comps.
I mean, one of those teams, you know, you get a weak league, and but no one's ever done it.
That's what makes it so hard.
Yeah,
that's what
incredible.
Makes it so hard. I mean, how many of these City wins lately have been by one goal? And how many of them have been after the 80th minute? You and I have said before that, yeah, it's a result of the pressing that they're doing and the fact that they are bombarding the other team for 90 minutes. But at the same time,
you definitely need a little
bit
of luck for sure.
It's just a bounce here, a bounce there, you know, or a penalty kick today. They could have allowed two penalty kicks. They were dives by Newcastle, but the ref, on another day, the ref calls both those, and all of a sudden, absolutely, you're down 2-1. So, yeah, I mean, we don't want to take too much away from City. We do want to take a little bit of something away from them, but we don't want to take too much away from them as they continue to roll. We'll keep analyzing them, unfortunately. Chelsea, as I said, 42 points, plus 20 goal differential. Liverpool, 38 points, 8 draws there, which is brutal. And most of those from winning positions. So they were hoping Virgil van Dijk will be the answer to that. They do have a plus 23 goal differential, which is higher than Chelsea's. So that's something to hang their hat on. But they've always been like that under Klopp. And they just plain have to win more than 50% of their games, which is the clip they're on right now. And Tottenham, 37 points, pulls themselves out of a tailspin. They do have 5 losses, which is not great. But they're at plus 19, and Harry Kane is mad.
By the way, Tottenham's next stretch of games, Swansea City, West Ham, Everton at home, Southampton, and then we got United on 31st. So we have a nice string of games, and we could run a nice string of points together.
They absolutely need to do that. They will sit above Arsenal, even if Arsenal wins in the Thursday match against Crystal Palace. Arsenal with that game in hand on 34 points, 3 behind Tottenham, but Arsenal's goal differential is only plus 11, which is really not very good. That's a mid-table goal differential, and you'd have to say that you'd be very worried about Arsenal, Ken. Burnley sits in 7th on 33 points. I believe that it should be about time for them to fade, but we'll see what happens. They're still hanging in there. They did take points off United because, Jesse Lingard's apparently the only thing we have. Leicester City 8th, Everton somehow in 9th. 27 points between for the 8th place team and I think 18 points for the 17th place team. So 9 points between.
And it's really tight down there between 12 to 20. I mean, all those teams could end up in relegation. One last thing at the bottom of the table. I think it's pretty interesting that the three teams that got relegated, I mean, Huddersfield and Brighton. Brighton hasn't been in the league, I think, since 1983.
Yeah.
And they're, four points clear of relegation. They're in 12th. Mm-hmm. So, pretty amazing job by those coaches. And Newcastle's out of the relegation zone, too. So, all three promoted teams right now, out of the relegation zone, which is pretty incredible. Well,
they're all heading for 40 points. That's what they say. Even Sean Dyche of Burnley, who's at 33 points, he said, which is exactly what Ranieri said, the Leicester City title run year, he said, we're aiming for 40 points. They're all aiming for 40. That is generally acknowledged as a safety zone. A lot of scrappy games throughout the week. We do not have time to cover them. A couple of notes. Crystal Palace picking it up out of the relegation zone. Everton's in 9th. And, besides that, Swansea looks like garbage. They fired their manager. West Ham is scrapping. Moyes is talking some smack lately, and somebody pointed out that he's really actually won two. I think he's been in charge for 10 games already, and he only won two. So they are out of the relegation zone, but it's not like they're going crazy. And they just lost to Newcastle in what they call a 6-point relegation fight. So, it's a big deal. But the Prem, just thick and fast. We had to do a quick midweek podcast. We will be back probably New Year's Day, would be my guess. We have Thursday match, Arsenal-Crystal Palace. We have Saturday, Manchester United-Southampton. We have Liverpool-Leicester City. That'll be a good game. Chelsea against the Stoke City Trap at home, though. And Sunday, Crystal Palace tries to beat Manchester City or hang in there against Manchester City.
I'm going to have to quit my job to watch all these games. I mean, the fixtures right now are just ridiculous.
Yeah, they're going way too fast. West Brom at home against Arsenal. West Brom's in horrible, and I believe if Arsenal drops points there, that Ken will cry. And then a full slate of games again on Monday. Oh, man, I didn't even realize. Monday and Tuesday are full slots. And then January 3rd, Arsenal versus Chelsea. Jeez.
I get tired just looking at the schedule.
We're not going to cover any more matches. I will say a couple things. One is that go Ravens. I mean, we look at our tracker to see how many people are from the Baltimore, Washington area. Honestly, it doesn't really matter. You guys should all be Ravens fans if you follow American football. Ken doesn't let me talk about American football. because he doesn't care about it. But, you know, Ravens play Bengals this weekend in front of, like, probably 70% crowd. And then hopefully go into the playoffs and don't lose to the Patriots by 50. But we'll see what happens. You and I will be in a tailspin of our own if they do lose the Patriots by 50, that we may never recover from. But
Patriots are the worst fans in all of sports. For those of you that are not in the U.S.,
you can get Pete's email address if you just email us. Check out our website at threebeardspodcast.com. Thanks for filling in, Dr. Pete. I'm glad you didn't get called. I did hear your beagle come into the room, and we'd like to welcome Harriet to the podcast, as my dog usually makes an appearance at some point. But thanks for hanging in there.
She's sitting here by my side, waiting for rabbit season.
Yeah. Well, she's ready to go. But thanks for filling in, and it's weird to have a Tottenham podcast, but we appreciate it. Anything you'd like to say to anyone or to Ken?
If I could just get back to Harry Kane for a minute.
No, you cannot. We are already about 10 minutes over. So we will end the episode there. We hope everybody has an awesome year. And going into the new year, you're ready to watch some of these games. Have an awesome week. We did it.